Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Hey, this is Mark, and before we start this episode, I have some very important business to handle here. A very big milestone is rapidly approaching the Entree Architect podcast. If you look at the number of this episode you're listening to, you'll know where I'm going. Episode 100 is only a few weeks away, and I want to make that episode the best one of all of them. So here's my idea. On episode 100, I want to feature the best guest yet. I want to feature you, the Entree Architect community. So here's my idea. Click on your voice memo app. On the iPhone, you'll find the voice memo app in the utilities group with your calculator and your compass. And if you have an Android, you're on your own. I don't know where you find it, but I know it's there. So click on that app, hold the phone up to your mouth like you're speaking on the telephone in order to ensure a nice, crisp, clean recording, and record your answer to this simple question. What is the one thing that you did this year to improve your business, your leadership, or your life? Share what you know. I want you to share what you know. Share one tip, one technique, one system, or suggestion that made your world a little bit better this year. Record your answer to this question. What is the one thing that you did this year to improve your business, your leadership, or your life? And send that audio file to me by email at support@entrearchitect.com. And if you do this right now, before you start listening to this episode, episode 100 will be the best one yet. And I've already received a whole pile of files. So if you sent me a file, thank you, thank you, thank you for contributing and giving back to the Entree Architect community. If you haven't yet sent me a file and you want to, and you should, and you know who you are, please do it today. It would mean so much to me. It'll be such a great episode. It's not hard to do. Just push the button, share what you know, and send it to support@entrearchitect.com. And I can't wait for episode 100 and hear your voice on the Entree Architect podcast. This is the Entree Architect podcast, episode 97. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. We all have a story. We all have knowledge that we can share with the world. We're all experts at something. And I think We all have a book inside us that needs to be written. On this part three of the Entree Architect podcast field guide series, I welcome back to the show the founder of 30 by 40 Design Workshop and author of two self-published books, our friend Eric Reinholt. This week on the Entree Architect podcast, we are exploring the world of self-publishing for small firm architects. This episode of the Entree Architect podcast is sponsored by Archisnapper, a great way to create and manage field reports. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/Archisnapper. And FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. Learn more at FreshBooks.com/architect. Eric Reinholt, welcome back to the Entree Architect podcast.
Thanks, Mark. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's good to have you back. Just in case anybody doesn't know who you are, you're a familiar voice now on the podcast. You are an architect and the founder of 30 by 40 Design Workshop. You're based up in Maine at Mount Desert. You're the author of two books now, The Unofficial Guide to House.com and Architect and Entrepreneur Field Guide for Branding, Building Branding and Marketing Your Startup Design Business. Links to both of those books can be found at your website at 30by40.com. You also have a great blog at 30by40.com. It's spelled out 30by40, all spelled out in words, .com/blog. We'll get you to the blog. And so you have some great resources there. So you have great resources for both architects and clients. A lot of great videos. You do some really great videos. So if anybody's sort of looking for some inspiration on how to do videos, check out 30by40.com/blog. So I'm not going to get into your origin story. If anybody wants to know who you are and where you've come from and all your background, I suggest that they go back to episode 84. You can go to entrearchitect.com/episode84. It'll take you right there. First three-time guest. That's pretty cool.
It's an honor. Yeah,
it goes
thanks.
Down in history as the first three-time guest. The first one was episode 84, Building, Branding, and Marketing Your Startup Design Business. So we talked about how to get a startup started and how to build it and brand it, and it was a pretty great conversation. And that sort of inspired this field guide series, and we made it into a series with episode 89, where we talked about passive income for small firm architects. So these are all really sort of nitty-gritty, great topics to talk about. On this third episode of the Entree Architect Podcast Field Guide Series with you, Eric Reinholt, we're going to talk about self-publishing for small firm architects, a man who has done this twice now in the process of putting together a third book with this ever-expanding knowledge of the publishing industry. I wanted to bring you back here and talk about how other architects can do what you're doing. So what do you think? Does that sound like a good plan?
It does, yeah. No, I have some knowledge to share, and I'm happy to help other architects. That's kind of been my goal with this whole series. So yeah, happy to talk about it.
Yeah, this will be fun. So let's start with the first book. The first book that you wrote was The Unofficial Guide to House.com. It's a great book. If anybody who's looking for information and answers about how to get noticed on House.com and how to sort of optimize your profile on House.com, it's a great book. It's a great way to start. You can get that on Amazon.com, or you can go over to 30by40.com and get it there. But what was your inspiration for that book? What was the thing that okay, I'm going to write a book. And first, why did you write a book? And number two, why did you pick House as the subject?
Well, I figured, this sort of fits into my entire business model. When I research topics, when I'm doing things for the business, I'm always looking for ways to sort of repurpose that content for other uses. And this was basically a need that arose of my own. I was sort of scratching my own itch. You know, I had to figure out when I opened 30 by 40 in mid 2013, and I, was trying to figure out how to best market my business. You know, I'm in a rural place. I'm practicing simple modern architecture, and so I have to figure out how I'm going to get these clients to me. And so House was a natural fit for me to do that. Great sort of social media marketplace. And so what I did was begin digging in, figuring out really, okay, so what's the best way to make use of this platform? And all the lessons that I learned along the way, I sort of kept a series of notes, and this notebook turned into an outline, which turned into a book. I thought, you know, if this is a problem that I have, this is surely a problem that other architects are struggling with, and interior designers, and, you know, it's a huge marketplace, and there's a lot of people involved in-house, and a lot of people trying to figure out how do they actually rank in search on house. You know, how do I use this to best effect? And so I think, you know, as you look at any sort of book, and nonfiction books in particular, you know, books solve problems. And so I knew that if this was a problem that I had, this was probably a problem other people had. And writing a book is an easy means of sharing your ideas and strategies and tips with other people. And so that was the sort of the genesis of the idea, taking this content and tricks and strategies that I had figured out and putting it out there to help other people. And it was, I would say it was a good success. You know, I learned a lot just writing the book and publishing it. And then I got a lot of great feedback from people who have read the book and continue to read the book and put it to use.
So I want to get into all of the details of that, because I think that's really interesting. I want to just go back real quickly to the fact that your studio is based on an island, a rural island. And so you started this idea about house just to get noticed, right? Mm-hmm. Just to get your name out there, to get your studio recognized for doing simple modern architecture. I get that question all the time at Entree Architect. I have a rural studio. I have nobody around me. How do I get noticed? So there you go. That's the first lesson that you can take away from this episode is to pick a social media platform. House is a great one to start with, because that's where our clients are looking for these things, and go optimize that. Go get noticed there first. And then from that, with Eric, it evolved. It just kept growing and growing, and it got to the point where he learned how to do what he needed to do. He got really good at it. And he took it to the next level. He took all of that information that he learned and he put it together as a book. And now he's getting noticed through the book, because now he's an expert on house. So people who are looking for house information, they're finding him there as well. And so that's a great takeaway. That's even separate from the publishing end, but just how to get noticed with a rural studio is a question that I get all the time. So I just wanted to point that out. So how long did it take you to write that first book?
You know, I can't say that I put a concerted effort into sort of making daily progress, which now I have a writing habit that evolved sort of as another aspect of working with house, because I began writing for house. So that became a daily habit of mine. But I think, you know, the initial book, putting that together, it's, you know, it's less than 100 pages. And so I would say some total of maybe 3 or 4 weeks to do that. So not entirely long. And what I would say is, and we'll probably get into this, you know, as we move forward, Mark, but, you know, the first book that you publish is not going to be, you know, it's not going to win a Pulitzer Prize. You really want to get in the habit of writing and publishing and putting these things out there so that you can learn. And, you know, the first book was a huge learning experience for me, both from an editing standpoint and a publishing standpoint and a content standpoint. And I did actually republish that book a couple of times to sort of make up for some things that were missing and some, you know, editing errors and things like that. So I think, you know, anyone who's thinking about, who's contemplating this and saying, oh, geez, I can't write a book, it's going to take too long or it's too much effort, should just sort of knuckle down and do it, because you're going to learn so much in the process along the way. You just have to publish something. You have to get it out there. And you can do it actually in under a week time. You know, I mean, I think this image of someone toiling away, you know, at a desk by candlelight, writing a book for years at a time, it's just false. It can take, the thing about self-publishing is it can take as long as you want it to take. So it can take a week, it can take a month, it can take 6 months. But the schedule is up to you. And once you develop a writing habit, and as we can talk about later, I think it just becomes that much easier to do.
Yeah, that's great advice. Is to just do it. We're not writing a novel here. We're writing a simple book that you want to get self-published. And so, Getting it out there is important. Entree Architect started the same way. For years, I kind of struggled over how am I going to do this and why am I going to do this and when I'm going to do this. And finally, just one weekend, I said, okay, I'm just going to do this. Right. And I put together the blog and I launched it. And then from there, I improved it and I helped grow it and look at where it's taken us now. So
as you go back and read those posts, exactly. What do you think? I mean, I look at my first videos. I look at my first blog posts. It's like, oh, really? You know, those are hard to look at, but they're way in the past because I've been publishing consistently every single week since then. And so those are buried, you know, and I've exactly. gotten that much better at my craft by just actively doing it every week.
Right. And the rule to learn and to remember is progress, not perfection. Mm-hmm. It's progress, not perfection. It's just keep moving. You want to have small victories every day. Have another small victory toward the big goal that you want to accomplish. Don't worry. Don't get overwhelmed with this idea. Oh, I'm going to write a book. How am I going to write a book? Just every day, just sit down and write. And that's
1,000 words every day.
Write a book.
Yeah, I think 1,000 words every day in 20 or 30 days, a month's time, you have a nice short book. You know, it doesn't have to be an 80,000 word book. I mean, that's, you know, if you look at a standard length book, maybe 80 to 100,000 words, it doesn't have to be that. It really doesn't. People are used to consuming shorter form content now. And, you know, especially for architects, if we can add in some imagery and things like that, you can have a book in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah. The other thing you mentioned was that you scratched your own itch. And so that also helps because you are already doing the work. You're already scratching your own itch. You're already solving the problem for yourself. You're becoming an expert for your own knowledge. And so you're not reinventing anything. You're not going out and saying, okay, I'm going to write about, you know, X, Y, Z, and I'm going to have to do all this research to learn about this so I can write about it. You're not doing that. You're starting with something you already know. So what are you good at? What are you already an expert at? Write about that. And just do that. Write a book about that. And then from that point, you can go through the process of getting it published. And then if you want to take it to the next level with another book, you've learned from that. You can learn from your mistakes and learn from your victories and go do it again and do it again and do it again. If you even look at the best authors out there, look at Stephen Covey's books, the first books. His first book is, you don't even know what his first book was. Mm-hmm. Stephen Pressfield, same thing. You don't even know what his first book was. It's buried in all of the others, and it's covered by the books that are now famous and popular.
That's
right. So that's a great lesson to scratch your own itch and to just do it.
That's how the second book came about too. Architect and Entrepreneur was scratching that itch too. You know, at the time I was writing for Howes and I was doing some sort of professional pieces. They wanted to develop a whole professional series of writing that was catered directly toward architects and interior designers. And so, you know, I started writing these pieces, which eventually formed the basis for Architect and Entrepreneur. So again, I was sort of scratching my own itch. I was figuring things out along the way. And I thought, hey, if I have these problems, other people have these problems too. And, you know, why not write about it? Why not share it so that we can all learn from it? And the profession is sort of, you know, better for it. And I think that has proven to be really successful for me. And I think, you know, any author looking to write a book, pick a problem, solve the problem. Your book is the sort of solution to the problem.
Yeah. You did this all by yourself, right? You didn't have a team of researchers and people helping you do this. You just did this yourself. And you this as a full-time architect. Running a studio, designing architecture, because that's another question I get all the time. How do I find time to do this? So how did you find time to do this?
It's so funny. I mean, everyone asks that. You can't possibly fit this in among all the other things. And the way that I did it was just to get up early. So, and I know this doesn't work for everybody, but you have to sort of pick your most creative time and dedicate that toward the writing. And for me, it was getting up at like 4:30 in the morning, and it's still something that I do. That's a habit that persists to this day. And so if you're able to do that, you know, you have a full-time work schedule, you have clients to meet, you have contractors to meet, job sites to visit. That stuff happens at a very set period of time, you know, between 8 and 3 or 4, whatever it is. And so those tasks obviously have to fit in there. So I take the time before that, before the kids get up, before the school routine happens, to write. And, you know, my minimum writing habit now is 1,000 words a day, but If you're really putting a lot of effort into it, you can get up to 4,000 or 5,000 words a day. And there's, you know, there's obviously secrets to doing that too. But, you know, for people who say they don't have the time, cut out watching TV, cut out doing, you know, it's hard to make time. I get it. And people have busy lives. But if this is a priority for you and you want to make it happen, you really have to find the time to do it. And, you know, I think there are hacks like, you know, using a voice recorder to, if you have trouble sitting down at a desk and writing, you know, 1,000 words, that seems really intimidating to you, take your phone and talk into your phone, sort of narrate that. And then you can actually get a transcription service to transcribe it for you and turn that into text. And then you have this sort of working framework for the book. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, means available for you to fit this into your schedule and make it happen. And like I said, it doesn't have to be that long. You know, if you dedicated yourself to writing 1,000 words a day for 20 days, you'd have a small book. I mean, that it's totally possible. Anyone can do that.
Yeah. And you don't even need to do 1,000 words. You can do 500 words and you can just sit, you can just sit down every morning and 500 words is not difficult. And another thing I wanted to ask you, if you do this every day, 1,000 words a day, and you're not writing a book 1,000 words a day, right? You're just sitting down and writing 1,000 words a day, whatever comes to mind, right?
I mean, currently I'm working on a book, so it's writing and editing and retooling. Yeah. But it's a habit that persists even when I'm not writing a book. And so I think architects have millions of ideas bouncing around, right? You have ideas for plans, you know, your project ideas, furniture ideas, whatever it is. For me, a lot of those ideas are book ideas. And so I keep Evernote files for books that I'm sort of constantly working on. Some of those will never see the light of day. I'm quite certain of it. But that writing habit for me is really important because it takes the things that are in my head and puts them on paper. It helps, you know, writing is a process of articulating ideas. And for me, you know, that's really, it can really transform those ideas and in a way that I can't do any other way. It's sort of like sketching, you know. Sketching transforms the idea in your head into a physical reality. And writing is the same way for me. And I find it to be sort of cathartic. And I find that I'm a happier person having done that every day. So it's a habit that I really enjoy.
It's a great habit. And the reason I bring up that you don't have to write toward the book is because very often, because I do that, I do a 500 words a day.
Okay. Yeah.
And I just write whatever comes to my mind. And sometimes, very often, those 500 words lead to a blog post, mm-hmm. or those 500 words lead to what I'm going to write in the newsletter. Or sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes it's just 500 words of babble. You know, it's mm-hmm. just, you know, my thoughts that are in my head at that point, and just I write 500 words. And if you do it every day, it becomes this habit that you just do. It's just part of what you do. But what's really interesting is very often when you're not writing toward a specific goal like you are with the book, those ideas are the seeds that are already in your head get planted mm-hmm. in words. And by doing that, they start blooming and they start becoming these other things. And it's amazing that you sit down with nothing in your head, or at least you think you have nothing in your head, and you start writing, and all of a sudden these amazing things start coming out of your head. And it makes everything else that you're doing easier. So maybe it's a design for one of your architecture projects, or maybe it's an idea for a passive income product, or maybe it is toward a book, or maybe it's a blog post that you want to write for your blog, or some social media post that you want to do. It's just a habit that can create content and create information for other people. So it's a great habit to get into.
I love that, you know, you brought design into that, because there are a lot of times if I'm stuck on a design problem, writing can help me sort of work my way through it. And I just love that. I mean, it's really powerful vehicle for, you know, professing ideas and concepts, and it sort of lifts you from one place to another. I love that about writing.
So what kind of tools are you using to write? What are you writing with? You writing into Evernote?
I keep topic ideas in Evernote, but I just write in Word. Mm-hmm. That's it. I mean, it's as basic and as dumb as it gets. And I, you know, there are higher level tools like Scrivener,
right.
That you can use. But really what I, you know, Microsoft Word works so well with Amazon, which is the main selling platform, that I don't see a reason not to use that. It's just like whatever the lowest friction software is in front of me, that's what I would use.
Right. And every one of us know that that. So yeah. It's not like you have to learn like Scrivener. I have Scrivener and I've used it, but you have to learn how to use Scrivener to really use it effectively. I mean, you could sit down and write right away, but it has so many bells and whistles that you don't even know where to start. There's other products like Byword and other apps like that, that basically blank out everything on your screen except for the words you're writing. And so if you are easily distracted, that's a great tool. It's a product called Byword, and there's other ones that do the same thing. But that's another suggestion, is that if you are going to write, when you're writing those 500 words or those 1,000 words, make sure everything is turned off. Make sure all of your notifications are turned off. Make sure your email application is turned off. Make sure social media is turned off, because it is very, very easy to be distracted and pulled away from what you're doing. And that habit gets sort of eaten up if you're not focused on doing it every day. So make sure part of that habit is to shut everything off before you start.
Right. Yeah. And there's, I was using for a long time this site called Focus at Will, where they've sort of designed this oral experience that you plug headphones in and they pump this music in. And you listen to this music and it sort of helps you focus on these things. It's supposed to be designed to help you do that. And I found that really great, because it starts off with this sort of meditation bell, and it says, you get this sort of sense that, okay, it's time to write. And so whatever habit you establish, whether it's turning notifications off or a bell in your ear or some sort of classical music, that's the thing that triggers your brain into saying, okay, time to write and time to do my 1,000 words or 500 words, whatever it is. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. One of the things that another habit that I've started is meditation. And I meditate for at least 10 minutes, usually longer than that, but at least 10 minutes a day. And that I do that just before I write. And so I sit down and I meditate, and I use an app called Headspace that sort of guides you through the meditation, which is really easy to sort of follow his guidance and just do what he tells you to do, and you get good at it, and then it becomes a habit. And then when I'm finished with that, I write, and it's sort of all part of that process. And so setting up those cues, like with your music and that the bell, is a good way to sort of tell your brain that, okay, it's time to write. This is the habit, and you do it over and over again, and it becomes something that you just do. It's not,
that's right,
it's not a struggle anymore. Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to Arcasnapper and FreshBooks for their support as platform sponsors of Entree Architect. Because as platform sponsors, these companies have provided funding and support for our overall mission to become an influential force in the profession of architecture. They recognize the need for small firms to build better businesses in order to be better architects, and I want to say thank you. ArcaSnapper is a simple tool for creating and managing field reports. With ArcaSnapper, architects draft field reports on-site using their phone or tablet. ArcaSnapper is easy to use, and it saves a lot of time. I put ArcaSnapper to the test myself, and I love it. Once I set it up and I understood all the features and how it works, it's become a part of my regular workflow at project meetings. I take notes, I shoot photos, I sketch my thoughts right on top of the photos, and it's all automatically uploaded to the cloud. Once I get back to the studio, I log in at my desktop, click a button, and my field report is ready to go. ArcaSnapper. Grow your business instead of struggling with field reports. If you want to learn more about ArcaSnapper and get a free 30-day trial, visit entrearchitect.com/ArcaSnapper. And FreshBooks. You've heard me over and over again say profit, then art. The systems are what make a difference in a well-functioning, profitable firm. Mastering some of the less creative tasks, like staying on top of our invoices and tracking our time, is a really crucial part of running our firms. And this is where FreshBooks, our friends and our platform sponsor, can help in a big way. FreshBooks is the amazingly simple invoicing solution perfectly suited for creative professionals who need to focus on their work and not their paperwork. Creating and sending invoices, tracking your time, and managing your expenses will become the easiest part of your day, and you'll probably end up wondering why you didn't start sooner. If you have questions, help is free forever. And you can always count on FreshBooks' award-winning support rock stars to go above and beyond whatever you need anytime. And I tested them myself. They answered my call on the first ring, and I had my issue resolved within minutes. It was beautiful. To try FreshBooks free for 30 days, just go to freshbooks.com/architect and enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Could you go through the steps that you've taken sort of in a basic outline of what it took from getting those outline notes into a published book?
Mm-hmm. So I kind of divide the steps into 8 primary points. Mm-hmm. So first is the topic selection. And as we talked before, you know, there's lots of ways to select a topic. But for the most part, if you're writing nonfiction, nonfiction solves problems. So you're going to find a problem, you're going to propose a solution, and your book is going to act as the journey between the problem and the solution. So whether it's told in narrative form or through images or short phrases, you know, that's the basic idea. You know, what do clients ask you most? Like, that could be a topic that you could work with. You can search Amazon or Google, YouTube, you know, look for pain points and problems, as we've been talking about. You know, look for similar books in your niche and look for 2- and 3-star reviews, kind of see what the shortcomings of those other books are. You can troll like house boards or Quora, Facebook. But basically, you know, from topic selection, then you're going to take that topic and you're going to outline, create a basic outline. And the outline is going to become a sort of chapter listing for the book. You know, you can look to other, if you're looking at other books in the topic area, you can check out their table of contents, see how other people have organized the information. And again, think about it critically and think, okay, is this the right way to present this topic? Are there more things that, you know, I could explore here? And my basic advice here is to try, instead of going a mile wide and an inch deep, I would go an inch wide and a mile deep. So you're going to take this outline and really flesh out all there is to know about it. And that'll keep your book sort of succinct and really focused on one idea, you know, this solution to this problem. From there, as we've been talking, you want to schedule it. So step 3 is to schedule time for writing every day. You know, try and write 1,000 words per day. Aim for, you know, a month's time, 20 to 30,000 words. I think that's a pretty good goal for your first book. That's a reasonable goal. And then, you know, number 4 is just write. And there's, if you're not used to writing, it can be a pretty painful process. And I think about, you know, Kurt Vonnegut, the author, mm-hmm. sort of divides writers into sort of 2 categories. One is a basher and the other is a swooper. And the basher is someone who sits down and writes and tries to make every sentence, you know, absolutely every sentence perfect, you know, retools and crafts everything. Whereas the swooper comes in and just writes stream of consciousness, gets it all on paper. And I would say you should try and be more of a swooper than a basher.
I agree.
So that you can get these ideas out.
Yeah, just and write then, whatever comes to your mind and don't try to craft it. Go back and craft it. Just you know, take everything that's on your head in your head and just flush it out onto the paper.
That's right. Yeah. So then, you know, the next step is step 5 is to rewrite it. So you're going to have to take that first draft and just, you know, recognize the fact that it's not going to be good. There's no way you can get the right words on the page the first time around.
Right. And it shouldn't be good. The goal should be that it's just information.
That's right.
You should not try to make it good in the first round. That's what the next step is for. And that rewrite is to take that and start polishing it.
Right. And then, you know, beyond that, step 6 would be to edit and proofread. And editing is its own can of worms here. 2 cents per word is a common editing rate for a professional editor. And so if you take a 30,000 word book, you know, you're starting to invest some cash into this. So $600 maybe more, depending on how good of a writer you are. So professional editing service, if you can afford it. If you're not into that, you can use services like Editor. That's an inexpensive software program that's a much higher level editor and grammar checker than you'll get with Microsoft Word. Like, you really just can't rely on the tools that are in Microsoft Word, the free tools. They're, right. they're not going to be sophisticated enough to work from an editing standpoint. And, you know, editing is really important. It's the thing that can really sink you on Amazon. Readers on Amazon are really picky, obviously, and they should be. You know, you want to write a quality book, and editing is a big part of quality in the end. So you can also use tools like Hemingway and Grammarly to help you out with the editing and proofreading. You know, rely on your friends and family. Maybe you know someone who's a writer, can help you out with these things. And there are some other techniques you can use too, but obviously you need to spend time editing and proofreading, and you might need to spend a little money.
If you did want to hire a professional editor, where do you find that person?
Well, so you can find them in online marketplaces, and I'm happy to provide people with links to those things. One of the resources that I really like is the Creative Pen, thecreativepen.com. And she lists a whole host of editors that she's used in the past. So she's a self-published author. She has her own podcast. And so I've actually used some of her resources. She's got about a dozen or so editors that she likes to work with. And so I think that's a good place to start. Obviously, places like Amazon and CreateSpace, you know, these online publishers, they have resources too. They're actually quite a bit more expensive than going with sort of freelance editors. So I'd say start it.
You can also use Upwork, which is used to be called Odesk, Elance merged, and now it's Upwork. And Upwork has not only, you know, programmers and designers and all kinds of engineering kind of things, but they also have a whole section on writing. And so there are writers and there are editors and there are people there as well that you can, you might save some money. They may not be as high quality as somebody who is a professional editor that's doing this for a living, but the goal is to get a second set of eyes, but from a person who knows what they're doing, who knows how a book should work, because editing isn't necessarily about finding the errors, although they do that as well, but they're also sort of allowing the book to flow. They're saying, okay, this is flowing into this and this is flowing into that, and maybe this paragraph shouldn't be here, it should be over here because it doesn't make any sense where it is. And those are things that you don't, as the writer, always see because you're so into it that an editor who knows how a book should be put together can help you with that.
That's right. Yeah. The hard part about those services, Mark, are you really have to know what you're asking for. You know, there's a difference between line editing and copy editing and proofreading. And those nuances can, you know, they mean different things to different people. So you just have to be careful with that. I would say for, you know, the first time author, self-published author, that you know, you try and give it a go by yourself and try and make use of some of the programs out there, and then you're gonna have to rely on some after publication editing, because you'll flag errors and you'll see things will come up and readers will tell you what's wrong with the book.
So that's good advice. So write the book, when you get to the editing part, use some of those software tools, just go through that process and get it out there and get it published. And then as you learn, as you get feedback, then you can edit and republish and edit and republish, because it's a digital book that we're talking about here.
That's right.
And so, and you can also, we can get into this, but you can also have hard copies printed from those digital books.
Right.
And so what's the next step after editing?
So there's only two more steps. So the next step is the cover design and formatting. So cover design, you know, like it or not, we all judge books by their covers, and you want your cover to fit in. You don't want it to stand out from the niche that you're selling in. So you want your book to look like the other books that are in the marketplace. You know, if yours looks poorly designed, if it sticks out because of its design, that's a bad thing. And so some of the things that you can use to help you with this are, you know, pre-designed templates. There are the bookdesigner.com has templates for this.
Is it thebookdesigner.com?
That's right. Yep. Okay. And he offers both interior and exterior formatting templates, really affordable. You know, I think it makes sense to just purchase one of those just so you can have it. You know, they're less than $100 each. You can head back to the 99 Designs to get your covers designed there. They'll hold sort of competitions for you, and that's got a minimal fee. And the resource that I really like is the creativeindie.com, and he offers a set of free templates if you sign up for his email list. There's some great book covers. He's a book cover designer himself, and he offers these free templates for you to use for both digital formats and then, as we'll get into, you know, some of the print on demand formats too. So and that's
Creative Indie is INDI or INDY?
INDI.
INDI.
INDIE.
INDI. Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, all of these resources will be on the show notes. I know we're talking about a lot of different resources here. So
right.
I hope you're not, you know, scrambling to write all these down. Just go to episode 97, entrearchitect.com/episode 97, and I'll have all the links there.
but you need a good looking cover, and your interior needs to be formatted in a certain way. So digital books don't have, you know, page numbers, obviously, because people can change the font size and the pagination. It happens at the device level. Print books are a little bit different, so you'll need different, you know, templates for those things. It's all really doable and totally easy. I don't want people to be intimidated by this. You know, it's setting up a basic template in Word is super easy to do. So just a question
on the cover. Is this something that we should design ourselves, or we should have somebody else design this?
I mean, I've designed my covers, and personally, I think they look like I designed them. So if you can afford a professional to do it, you know.
Do you think I mean, you said that the book is going to be judged by its cover. So 99 designs is like less than $1,000, you know, depending on what level you do. Could be a $500 investment at the lower level. Is it worth doing something like that to get a higher quality? Because architects are so often, I mean, every architect designs their own logo, and some of them are great and some of them are horrible. Mm-hmm. Would it be a good investment to stick to the buildings and let a graphic designer design the cover of the book?
The bootstrapper in me would say no. Design it yourself, because I mean, this is all an experiment, right?
You don't know if this that's is good advice. Sell. Yeah.
So, you know, if I can limit my investment up front, if it really becomes an issue for me, I think I would probably pay for the design. Like if I really got stuck on the design, I'd probably pony up and pay for the design. But if I have the skills to do it, I'll probably put something out there. And I think it, you know, just look at the other covers in the market that you're trying to sell to. I don't actually think it's too hard to sort of imitate some of the things that are happening there.
That's good.
If you have any graphic design skills whatsoever. And actually, if you download some of those templates from the Creative Indie, there's lots of sort of little techniques that you can capitalize on that will make your book look like the other books in your genre. So I would say that's where you should start.
Yeah. And that's very good advice. It's we need to remember that, you know, this is not only a passion project, this is a profit project. And so the less you spend up front, the potentially the more you can make at the back end.
Used to, like text on a book cover on a, you know, colored background. Like, so that's what I've done for the most part. That works remarkably well. Okay. It's simple.
Yep.
Just make some graphic element sing there. And I think you have a cover.
Yeah, and your covers look great. So it works.
The final step, and this is the most critical, is to actually publish it. You know, so many people have texts that just languish and they're never published. You know, you can write and rewrite and, you know, fine tune ad infinitum. It can just last forever. Publish the book. You have to put it out there. You'll never know what's wrong with it until people start reading it and start commenting on it. And then that gives you the framework to make it better, to make the next book better. And so that's the final step to publishing is the final step to getting it out there. It's actually just the beginning of the next series of steps, which is marketing, which is another whole topic.
Yeah. But what, before we can maybe touch on that, cause we're running out of time here, but cause maybe we can have you come back and talk about marketing it. How do you publish it? I mean, once you have this manuscript, you have it all written in Word and you have it edited and it's all ready to go. You have the book cover, you know, print or designed, you have all this information. What do you do? How do you get it on Amazon?
So, I'll just step back. You know, I mean, obviously Amazon is the place you're going to publish it. So these things apply specifically to Amazon,
right.
The iBook store. So Amazon has 60% of the market. The iBook store has like 20% of the digital book market.
And that's Apple's marketplace.
That's right. Yeah. Apple's. And then Barnes and Noble is something like 15% of the market. So you're going to focus on Amazon, and all you need for Amazon is you can either upload the Word file directly and their Kindle converter converts it for you. Mm-hmm. Or you can upload a PDF, for example, you know, or a filtered web page. So it's like very simple to get it out of Word. You just do a save as filtered web page, upload it to the KDP. So you're going to use on Amazon's site, the portal that you're going to use is KDP. So it's Kindle Direct Publishing. And that's, you're going to sign up for a free account there. You're going to log into that. You're going to start, you know, create a new book, and you're going to give it a title, subtitle, keywords, categories. There's a whole list of things that you fill in, but
and they walk you right through step by step.
It's a wizard. Yeah. It's there are specifics that you need to know with each one of those things. You know, for example, putting the book into categories is really important. Figuring out what keywords you want people to find your book using, really important. And those things, you know, it's hard to get into a lot of detail here, but each one of the steps in the wizard walks you through the necessary information. So Amazon wants you to publish. They've made it really easy to publish on this platform. So you're going to take your cover image, you'll upload the image. It's just like uploading a file to an email as an email attachment. It's the same exact process. You're going to upload your Word file, upload your image file, set the price, press publish. And what they do from that point is they basically review the book for content. They want to make sure it's a quality book. And so their internal review process is somewhat of a mystery to me. But in general, the book will be turned around for publication in less than 6 hours.
Wow. So it's, you write it and you put it up there and the next day it's out there.
That's right.
And then the work begins.
Then you have to sell it. I mean, that's the difference between self-publishing and traditional publishing. Traditional publisher is doing all the marketing for you. You know, they're great at selling paper. That's their business model. But self-publishing, it's up to you.
Right. Amazon will sell it for you, but they're not going to market it for you.
That's right.
And that's a pretty deep subject. And I think it's probably a subject that we can spend an entire episode on. So maybe if you're interested, mm-hmm. we can come back and do part two of the books series, of the Field Guide series. Mm-hmm. And we can go through step by step on how you marketed your books and how people can do that. Before we wrap, we'll go into the marketing and how you did that, but let's talk money a little bit. If you're willing to.
Sure.
You know, how much did it cost you to put the book together on the front end? And then approximately how much are you making per month on a single book? I mean, let's use the first book as an example, because that's what people were going to do, is their first book.
Okay. So first book, upfront costs, probably $100.
Ballpark. Okay.
I mean, it was nothing, Mark. It's hard to account for your time, obviously. You know, if I'm not working in the business, if I'm taking time away from the business, then that's, you know, that's a different calculus.
Right. But so less than $100 out of pocket.
Yeah, because I designed the cover myself. You know, I spent time researching how to do all these things, but really the costs are super minimal. I mean, it's you're investing some resources in writing the thing and maybe in some software, but you know, that's pretty minimal. And then in terms of revenue on the back end, so what I'll say is when you price things on Amazon, they have a very specific price anchor. They want your book to be priced, for the most part, between $2.99 and $9.99. And that, if you use those price guidelines as an author, you get a 70% royalty. So they're really incentivizing that. Anything outside of that, those price limitations are subject to a 35% royalty. So, you know, you want to be in that sweet spot, $2.99 to $9.99.
So you're actually making more money by pricing the book lower.
That's right. Yeah. And so, yep. And so that book, you know, there's lots of frameworks for marketing things. And one idea is to offer a book for free for a while. And so what I did was offer that book for free as I was just getting it out there. You know, I wanted to get it into the most number of people's hands as I possibly could. And so offering it for free, obviously, you're not making any royalty on it. And with time, if you take a free book and transition it into a paid book, you can slowly raise the price over time. And what that does is it helps you in Amazon's ranking algorithm. And so that's kind of my strategy. That's what I did there. And so that book probably sells 2 copies a day. And right now I think I have it at, $6, something like that. So a 70% royalty it's not much money. And so for every month, that book is not bringing in a lot of money. The second book that I published, The Architect and Entrepreneur, that book sells close to 15 copies a day, between 10 and 15 copies a day. Wow. That book is priced at, you know, $10 a copy, roughly, $9.99. So that I'm, you know, open to the 70% royalty on that. And so that's $7 for every digital copy that's sold.
And so if you do the math on that, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good take for every year. And that's like 25 yeah. grand a year.
More than the $100 out of pocket. Mm-hmm. Not bad. There's your incentive, guys. There's your incentive to do this. It's less than $100 a month of your time and passive income for the rest of your life.
Right.
Right. I mean, you have to go back and maintain it and update it and keep marketing it in order for that to happen. But once it's out there, it starts making money for you. And if you want to learn more about passive income, go back to episode 89, entrearchitect.com/episode89. We talked all about passive income, including books. But this is one of those tools that you can invest some time and some effort and some pain to get yourself together a book about a thing that you know all about. And you can have this ongoing passive income that just, puts $100 bills in your pocket every month.
That's right. Yeah. Every day.
Yeah. 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 So it's worth doing. So let's wrap up we'll do marketing and we'll do, sort of the effects of the book. Why, what are the benefits of doing this other than the income? Because I'm assuming that there's some influence in the profession that comes along with this, that you be perceived as an expert in these subjects.
Yeah.
It helps market your firm, helps you get noticed because now you have these tools out there that are generating some marketing benefits from that. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that in the next episode, the next session of the Field Guide series. Yes. And we'll wrap it with that. Do you have any last final thoughts on this subject, on the front end of books?
I mean, it's a deep subject, Mark, as you pointed out, and I feel like just the writing part of it is is the 50% mark, obviously. There's a lot of marketing that part of self-publishing, a huge part of self-publishing is the marketing aspect. But as you were mentioning, the idea of, why you would write a book, if you think about the word authority, author is the root of that word. And so I think there's so many great, great reasons to write a book and self-publishing is a huge opportunity for architects to, further influence and ideas in the world. And it's something I'm really excited about. It's something I continue to do. And so that should tell you that it is definitely a passive income earning opportunity that I believe in and that does really work. So I'm working on, volume 2 of Architect and Entrepreneur. I've been in, my business has been functioning for a couple of years now. I've learned a lot since I wrote, the first volume. And so volume 2 really looks at exploring these hacks that I've come up with for, finding new frameworks for earning revenue. And I think there's some really exciting things that I talk about in the book, some concepts that are much higher level than volume 1 and really walk people from just opening a business, the basics of opening a business, to taking it to the next level and really exploring where architectural practice is heading today. I think I'm really excited about the possibilities for small firm architects like myself, and I've been happy to have been the guinea pig and to sort of pioneer some of these ideas and techniques. And, I'm hoping to launch the book sort of middle of next month. So I hope people will be on board to read it and learn from my experiments.
No, you're an inspiration, Eric. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge here, sharing your knowledge in your books. Your studio is 30x40 Design Workshop. Your world on the internet is 30x40.com spelled out. You're on Twitter and active on Twitter at Eric Reinholdt. That's a T at the end. So it's ERICREINHOLDT, Eric Reinholdt. Right. So look for his new book coming in a month or so. And you'll definitely hear about it through Entrepreneur Architect as well. Eric, thanks for your dedication to the profession and sharing your knowledge here at the Entree Architect Podcast.
Happy to do it, Mark. Good talking with you.
So I think that was a great episode with Eric Reinholdt. He shared so much about putting together his books and how to do it step by step, filled with information. You can check out the show notes at entrearchitect.com/episode97. I'll have all the links to everything we talked about in this episode there. And don't forget to send me your audio file, share what you know, answer this question: what is the one thing that you did this year to improve your business, your leadership, or your life? Record that answer and send it to support@entrearchitect.com. I appreciate you guys so much. If you want to leave a review for this show, you can go to iTunes. Entrearchitect.com/iTunes is a nice handy link that I'll send you over there. You can leave me a review and a rating and tell me what you think. That helps the show get noticed by other entrepreneur architects and helps us keep growing and be more and more influential in the profession. I appreciate you for listening and all the support and encouragement. Please send me your audio files. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to share what you know. See you next week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.